Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we have, we're going to be joined by George Dixon shortly. And we will have, I believe we're going to have Ross Hamilton tonight. George has invited him. He's the author of the Traditions of Giants book on giants in Giants.
So you're really following up on the discussion that you had 2 weeks ago.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
And
I wasn't part of that.
Yeah. So Lila is kind of up to date on what's going on. And
yeah. I couldn't be on the show, but I kind of listened to it. I was packing.
Yeah. So there's proof of many different people had lived many years ago, right? And but what happened is funny. Oddly enough, everybody their archaeological remains and their history have been more or less negated.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
Well,
maybe George could tell us why, or Ross could tell us why.
Well,
I think George is with us.
They will.
Just opened that.
They will tonight.
Good.
Yeah, that's what they're going to do. Hello, George. Are you with us?
No, you X'd him out.
Yes,
you did.
Oh, hello, George.
How you doing, Leo?
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm doing fine, dear. I missed you last week.
Oh, thank you very much. I missed you, too.
We had a good talk on giants.
I listened as much as I could to that talk. I was packing, so I heard part of it.
Oh,
it was quite interesting.
Yeah, so we're going to be joined by a couple of people tonight, or maybe not.
Well, hopefully we'll see what goes on that. But I think it would be good if we continued on this. And I talked with my friend Brendan, and hopefully Brendan will join us later on. And hopefully, you know, I've been waiting to hear from Ross Hamilton, who actually wrote the book, and maybe he can explain more in details. I think some of the big questions that we have. And what you are asking is right, because the academic world, you know, has hidden a lot of the artifacts and a lot of the knowledge, you know, that was kept from the main public. And,
why is that, George?
Oh, geez. I guess control. What is the reason? You know, the control on people and you know, just events. And,
is there anything that happened that you could identify that people wouldn't want us to know about giants?
Oh, well, sure. Let's say from a religious aspect, you know, your belief systems. You know, if for people to acknowledge that, you know, yes, giants were real, you know, not just written in the Bible and talked about, you know, that there were real things upon this earth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard for people to understand that life... did go on, you know, past 10,000 years ago. And,
right.
You know, that the Bible leaves a lot to be desired, I think, for explaining, you know, the history of mankind. And who am I to say, but other than, you know, the academic world or the powers that be, you know, keeps it in check in a sense where, you know, they can keep control of the information. And, you know, its history is always written after the fact. And, of course, they write into it, you know, what they want.
But we did coexist for a while.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, we talked about the Anunnaki with Zechariah Sitchin's work, you know, over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that is just one race of people or an understanding of people that we've had contact with. But you know, there are many others. You know, possibly, you know, from outside this galaxy.
Right.
No, I think we have somebody else on here. Hang on a second.
516. So that must be New York.
Hello, 516. Is this Brandon? Hello.
Leo. Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, Brandon. How are you?
Okay, I'm pretty good. I was hoping I'd hear from some other guests, like we had chime in last week. How are you, George?
I'm fine, Brendan. Always nice speaking with you, my friend.
And I'm Lila. I'm with Leo tonight. 2 weeks ago, I wasn't able to be on the show, but I did listen to parts of it. I was packing.
Lila is my normal, is my regular co-host through thousands of shows.
A pleasure to meet you, Lila. Thank you.
Nice to meet you. And I don't know very much about giants at all.
Well, Brendan, Lila, Brendan might be able to answer the questions that you were raised, or, you know, the academic world.
Because I think, but I'm just looking through the book now, and I'm looking at this, because I covered it a while back, but they just seem to, it seems like academia and the archaeologists just seem to dismiss any of all this information, and it didn't fall into their plans or something, or else they just wanted to diminish physical and mental capacities of Native Americans.
All those are very accurate critiques. I feel possibly still today, even when the Smithsonian has been submitted with specimen numbers from those annual reports that are obviously of the larger stature human remains, specimen is lost somehow. Even today, they say the card catalog, what have you. It seems like a comedy play here, dark humor.
Do you think there's a particular reason for that, Brendan?
Only I think that those who are possibly working the Smithsonian brain police, if you will, are finding it easier to not have to deal with complex issues. The budget constraints allows for the progression of orthodox, say, white cultural value reinforcement. And remember the yes song, don't surround yourself with yourself? Go on back to square. They seem to not be able to square the circle.
You know, I found, though, that...
that's a nice way of putting it, Brendan.
I've noticed that even the museums, the native museums, okay, don't even seem to be... acknowledging this ancestry.
I think there's some pride there that the oral tradition, which was teased out very slowly by Ross from the likes of Vine Deloria and Floyd Red Crow Westerman and Jake Swamp, were jewels, as I took it, Leo. And it's as if, you know, when the grandparent speaks, no proof is necessary. It's the final word, and it's taken with a grunt of mutual assent and cognitive consilience. We are all agreed that these people among the native peoples existed. We need not prove that the tall ones were there. And if the white Wasichu, the white asses, are choosing to deny us, let them, as far as they choose to go along that pathway. I don't think they choose to disabuse us of what their truths they know.
Yeah, it's really pretty ridiculous. There are records here of this horrible man-eating giants called Kukujik. Okay, and another family of enormous beings called Uskon, and that were found in and around the Hudson area. I believe. And again, from this, from the Mi'kmaq mythology, and I have a Mi'kmaq heritage, so this is very curious to me.
Well, I heard it tastes like sweet pork, so I don't know, Leo, if I'll choose to go to dinner, how well humans, to serve humans, question rises up in my mind, but to reference a earlier TV series, but... It seems to me that cannibalism certainly has been demonstrated to exist even in the fecal remains of remains found in places like Chaco Canyon and Mesa Verde from times of great stress when there were drought. The Polynesians certainly practiced it. Let us say sacramental cannibalism to eat the heart or the brain for the courage and for the knowledge. But as far as to necessarily attribute a human-like giant that was eating of humans, it's possible, but go back just several hundred thousand years ago and come forward to maybe more recent years, there were giants in the forest, not the dodo bird, but there's a Dimetrodon or something. I've forgotten. If you remember the movie, Mysterious Island, there's this really large flightless bird that attacks the crew. Perhaps, Leo, what we get today is a mischaracterization of carnivores that were of the megafauna variety that subsisted on human flesh when possible, and it has been confabulated into some of these remaining stories.
You know, Brendan, you're talking about long spans of time, thousands of years.
Tens of thousands, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's take this back, let's say, to 9772 B.C., let's say 11,000 years ago, and get an understanding of what happened then and, you know, what happened to mankind at the time. At that time, we had a major cataclysm, which the Earth actually stopped in its rotation and then rotated in the opposite direction. And, of course, all the magnetic fields of the Earth and so forth were displaced, and they were started up again. But getting an understanding of the subtle energies of the body, picture the brain or the mind as more of a hard drive, and what happens if the hard drive is erased, because that basically is what happened to the Earth. The Akashic records, or the records as we understand it, actually came to a standstill. So, I do believe that mankind, a lot of the knowledge that we did have, wasn't erased from our brain. I mean, it was erased from the brain, and since then we've been on a stair-step evolutionary time where, you know, actually we're relearning again things that we already know. And, you know, it took us maybe 10, 15,000 years after that great cataclysm for us to come out of that period of you know, human survival. I mean, it's built within our bones that we will survive. The body knows how to take care of itself and defend itself. But understanding that, you know, human cannibalism was a way of life at one time within our growth.
Mm-hmm. You know, check this out. This is really, really amazing. This is in the book. It says, to this we might add from the Hotcock, the similar accounting of giants. Not only are the giants by nature man-eaters, as their Hotcock name, and I can't pronounce this one, Wangaroopy, reveals, but male giants are as tall as trees, four times the height of a man. On the other hand, giant women, who are particularly noted for their beauty, are about the same size as humans. And again, this is from the Mi'kmaq mythology, but it says, sorry, I'm dry here. It says, what is it? Called Ushkan and Kaguchik, the liver-colored giants who return from their hunting expeditions carry at their belts a string of caribou as easily as Mi'kmaq could carry a string of rabbits. These tawny giants are friendly, as is shown by their dealings with a party of Mi'kmaqs recorded in legend. And the party had been lost in a fog for several days or in an ordeal, and afterwards saw their powerful deliverers in faithful remembrance. They couldn't believe the size of these guys.
Right.
People divided the giants into two basic groups, the good and the bad. In the beginning, both were cannibalistic, but the good giants later stopped this practice and began to live among regular humans.
Right.
It was from their ancient mating practices that the later human giants found in the mounds were believed to have descended. Very, really fascinating that these people...
It certainly is, and Vine Deloria, again, who is a mentor of the author there, in Red Earth, White Lies, on page 138, does speak of the fact that from talking with the elders, and this is Deloria speaking to, let's say, elders who in the 40s and 50s were, of course, relating this from their grandparents who were turn of the century, and it goes along the same lines of that they were very much larger and taller, and by traditional elders were being called the tall ones, and consistent with your sizing there again, Leo, and last week, 2 weeks ago, description of even George's 50-foot, the Megatrons, I'm feeling that...
Metatron,
that we're not talking about just necessarily 12 to 14 feet. And if that's the case, then that large stone, the woman who was a call-in 2 weeks ago also mentioned that, is it not possible that they were the part and parcel workers for things like the big mega structures, the pyramidal type houses. And George, maybe you will recall for us Pokal, who is 8 feet tall himself, and some of the stones in his temple, I think, are probably beyond the easy move of mere humans.
I have that lady, Karen, may be on tonight, right here. Let me just check. Hello, 402. Is this Karen? Hello? Hello, caller 402, 305?
Yeah, hi. Sorry, I couldn't get my mute button off.
Yes,
I'm here again, and I'm going to ask some questions on and off, but I've got a crew of adolescents unpacking a U-Haul for me, so I'll have to mute in between. But I did have a question about those Akashic records for you, and then if you want to, you know, I'll be listening to if you have anything.
Sure.
I'll kind of come in and out. But do you think some of those are saved in crystalline formation, some of those records?
Saved?
George?
What do you mean by saved?
Well, with the properties of crystal to mm-hmm. be able to, you know, be used as chips and so forth, information storage, do you think that some of these things were put into crystal storage, some
uh-huh.
of the ancient records is what
I'm
asking.
I'm sure there was. Crystal is just one way of holding on to information. Of course, you know, you can load a crystal with information, and it will continually amplify it within itself, you know, for to the end of time.
Or George, we're not one of the crystal skulls, supposedly also capable in its, you know, interstitial crystallinity to capture information, maybe even projecting image back to the meditator who was contemplating the crystal skull.
Well, answer one thing at a time here, but just to sidetrack for 1 minute, understand that the crystal skulls, each skull hold the information for 1,000 years. And actually, the information that was recorded within a 1,000-year period of a group of people, what they were able to do is store it within the crystal. The crystal was started, you know, before the 1,000-year time limit was up.
Wow.
When the time limit
sure.
was up, it was stored with all the information of that time. That's why right now it's bringing all these crystals together, because with the progression of the equinox, it's very important for them to meet up with one another at this time. go back to your original question. What was your name again?
Karen.
Karen, I'm sorry, Karen, yeah.
Yes.
Any question with the crystals?
Right, and also, well, let me just tell you that, interestingly, I gave a gift of a certain stone I had to someone who gave it to someone because they were getting messages from this stone, and
mm-hmm.
it was like it was a record, but it was a natural stone,
mm-hmm.
not, you know, not like a quartz crystal, a large one, or anything like that.
Sure,
it was
sure.
really,
yeah.
you know, very much
so how
it was more like calcite or something like that.
So how are they getting messages, Karen?
The stone started talking to them.
Good.
There is actually a case of supposed authenticity that either dental calcite or conceivably quartz may be able to act as a receiver and actually resonate out audible sounds in either the body, the head, or then as a talking stone. I mean, I think there is some suggestion that the things like the ear sounds that we get, supposedly the tinnitus, is not all a ear nerve response or a brain manifestation, but it may be actually from people's dental hardware as well. So I think that we have had some very strange anecdotal situations where we have the capacity to actually become receivers, as bizarre as that sounds.
Karen, years ago when I was working with UFO abductees, I used to do a lot of lectures. And what I used to do is bring crystals and some rocks. Now, these rocks are from all different parts of the world. And what I would do is lay these rocks out and have people, as they pass by, you know, feel them, and I ask them what they pick up from these rocks. And if nothing else, once they pick a certain rock, it gives me, it gave me a choice, I think, where to direct them in helping them, you know, try to deal or look at the situation that they're in. But the rocks, they hold a witness to a certain understanding. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a crystal itself. The rock itself is a living thing, just like silicone's a living thing, but it grows over a longer period of time. So,
can I interject something here? Would that be appropriate? Okay.
Sure.
I'm going to tell you a little story is that, you know, I found this rock that looks like a face, right? And immediately it struck me as a guardian and a guide with spirit because... Yes. It's not a totally natural formation. It's sedimentary, you know, horizontal rock. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you have this eye that is totally round, larger than a basketball. And it's really quite the sight. But my first thought was that it was living. And then, interestingly, this week I got an article, and I clicked on a link, and it was about living stones, how ancients used to put their spirit and a certain kind of light frequency in stone,
yes,
but leave part of themselves out to reincarnate.
That's
to
right.
Find it later.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Could you talk about that?
Well, the Toltec Indians practiced that. The Toltecs practiced that. A warrior did. And the energies of the power that a warrior had, what he would do is that he would put it in a power object as a stone. And he would bury it. And you never know, 100 years later, somebody may come by and kick it up and pick it and put it in a pocket. And what would happen is the energy of that stone would enter the energy of the person themselves. And it would just continue the manifestation. But it wouldn't have the power that a physical body would have. But it can be a hindrance, there's no doubt about it.
A famous story, George, also is Tecumseh's brother, the prophet, made that curse on William Henry Harrison, and then for every 20 years after that, Lincoln and everyone, all the presidents die every 20 years, based on the prophets taking 20 stones, possibly quartz, jingling them together, putting the right mojo on them, tossing them into the fire, and further rites. So to suggest the possibility that the earth, the stones themselves, can retain a memory of people's intentionality, possibly you jumble them up, you bang them together, you heat them up, and what happens is actually in some instances the magnetic domains within them are able to then rotate a little bit while they're being flexed and otherwise pressed upon or heated, and at the time you release them and they get out of the fire or hit the ground, they may then capture almost like a recording, like a some sort of Edison, you know, wax cylinder that's now been engraved with, you know, the intentionality. So if you then tell people this has been done and there's a confirmation of that fearful, you know, I believe that this person has powers over me, I feel that there is a certain resonance with and there's an entanglement between the particles and maybe today we're getting physics to be able to actually see this in the atomistic level, entangling, exotic behavior, things that, you know, defy normal linear thinking.
Well, let's talk about nanotechnology, but let's don't.
Okay. It's really seemingly endless, and I'm not finding anything said tonight by Karen to be inconsistent with, you know, even form follows function. Karen, if you're seeing an object that looks like a human being, and you're responding to it in that fashion, though you know it to be rock, I don't find that at all odd, actually. And perhaps even formed by the hand of Mother Nature, also this kinship with finding the deities. I see the face of God sometimes in the tree, in the stone, and I don't think this is a unique, you know, then-current. And today you're rediscovering those same secrets, let's say, that were not passed along and open again. You've opened up the door.
Well, you know
what the article had said was that, you know, intentionality was there in basically putting their own spirit, except for a piece of themselves that would reincarnate, and at an important time in history, that the reincarnated self would synchronistically find this and be then reinstated, I guess is one way to say it, into that person. So that was a very interesting, and she was talking to some of the Mayan structures, actually.
The Mayan
that
structures?
That was the message that she, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what the article was from.
Well, you know, it's a hell of a way to get back into life, and yet, you know, you take a look at just the concept or understanding of karma and reincarnation.
So what was the result of her discussion, Karen?
Yeah,
pardon?
This thing say to her?
What was the outcome?
Well, the outcome of the conversation was that these beautiful carved, totems, I guess what I would call them, I don't know what they're called officially, Mayan totems, were actually carved and then embodied with spirit and a particular light energy, and they could watch the passing of time as long as they didn't fall over. They actually used their eyes to see from. If they had fallen over, they couldn't follow it, and that the time frame was sped up for them so they could watch grass grow and, you know, time move faster than our three-dimensional time. So if you wanted to connect with one of those, it was important to spend at least an hour in front of it so it even registered in its vision. And that eventually that the reincarnated self, that the piece that was left out, would have this sense of needing to find something that was lost and be basically then that energy and that information would be reinstated in that human being that had made it through, you know, the centuries.
Yeah, but Karen, why would you want to get involved with somebody else's situation?
You wouldn't.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to, let's go to Easter Island for instance. Why... I mean, there were all of these statues looking up into the sky, have eyes and all this kind of stuff, but I don't know of anybody who's actually communicated with them, or if there's any spirits that are actually in those stones.
Do you know of anything like that?
I have an anecdote from a gather of Native people last year, down in Lake Titicaca, Bolivia, I guess, the Isle of the Moon and Sun. This was reported by Paula Harris, the woman who's interested in this sort of species discussion. Well, the long and short of it is that this person gets to one of the Isles of the Sun and Moon to this cliff face that's obviously a built structure, and engages in a conversation with and is allowed entry into this tomb where an 8-foot giant, possibly of a different color being, communicates intentionality, and then the person is allowed in their conscious mind to come back out of the temple. And this was right around the time, if you recall, that there was a meteorite that actually struck, and it was one of the rare instances in which a nearby shore of Lake Titicaca had a meteorite actually impact, and people saw it. It contemporaneous within the same day or so. So a lot of the people at the gather took these as coincident signs supporting each other that a breakthrough, a communication, and then something falling from the sky from above, as if, you know, information from the other domain above as above, so below, there's been a transmission.
Why do I think that, to me, if you go back to the Anunnakis, and you go back to the original, that they were all huge giants. They were all 16, 18, 20 feet tall. And their ancestors, which were the Egyptians and Sumerians, all the pharaohs were extremely tall as well, 14 and 16 feet tall. And then as they and all of these cultures went from Egypt to South America, actually you had the pyramid cultures there, and you had pyramid cultures everywhere. You have records of these incredibly tall people. and the descendants of that. And we know George has been talking about this for several years now on this program. We've had a number of programs about it.
Mentioned it, yeah.
But we talked about the Anunnaki and how they and genetic manipulation, okay, that went on with the human and with the human gene chromosomes mixing with the Anunnakis, and the Anunnaki have legends for thousands and thousands of years have talked about giants. All right.
But Leo, there was many races of people, just like the Anunnaki was just one race.
Well, I know they were a remarkable race of people that actually were known for their human manipulation, for their genetic manipulation. All right. So I don't know if these others were, but these were definitely, I would think. You know.
Another race was the Syrians. And if nothing, they were the male donator for the Adam seed, if you'd want to call it that. But each of these races had different sizes. And, you know, in years ago in studying sacred geometries with the Flower of Life workshop, Dromolo Megazadek was talking about the differences in height and consciousness was based on the DNA. And the more chromosomes that you have, you know, the higher of stature you are. Just like mentioned before, the Adene people, they were 10 feet, 14 feet.
Right.
If you go to the Egyptians with the 18th dynasty, Akhenaten and Nefertiti. Nefertiti was 14 feet 6, and her husband was 16. Akhenaten. And I believe the Anunnaki ranged from scale, you know, anywhere from 12 feet to 20 feet. But in some of the Egyptian carvings and monuments, they depicted different size humans, and that actually depicted the different size humans at that time that lived.
But they don't seem to make it on the History Channel when we get the purview of the Egyptian, say, sarcophagi and the current mummies that they're willing to show us, George.
Well,
It sounds like the Smithsonian echo again. For what reason again, folks? If we can answer again the why, maybe we're wasting too much time on the finer details, and perhaps also that they're revealing themselves again. Their time has come again to be revealed. I mean, what we're talking about tonight seems to me suggestive of these end times, when the wisdom grows broad enough and deep enough to be able to rediscover these lost truths.
Well, rediscover,
and that's
or
exactly
maybe
what I was talking about.
Okay. And what do you do after you rediscover them?
I would hope that would be part of what it comes out.
I really believe that what we are experiencing right now is that we are re-experiencing that which we already know. And everything that we're experiencing right now is actually coming to a close or bringing things to a head. Understands that we're sentinel beings having a human experience, not a human having a spiritual experience. And, you know, there comes a time where, enough is enough. And understand that, you know, we follow an evolution, a spirit evolution, you know, on this earth, but it's three-dimensional, not four-dimensional. And
well,
understand.
I think if you look at history, look at the overall historical perspective, all right, of how we as normal people have been manipulated by the academics, by governments, right, by religions, by all of these different manipulative organizations, all right, to believe in one thing, that we are not extraordinary beings, that we are not, we don't have extraterrestrial ties, that we don't, you know, all of this information has been kept from us for eons and eons, and, for ages. And even though it's known by groups, it's known by governments, it's known by secret societies, it's been so well hidden from us that to the point where even when it's told to us, we're so damn brainwashed, we sit there and go, ah, that's full of shit. That's ridiculous. We don't believe that. Yeah, conspiracy theories. You know, and like, to me, there is no greater conspiracy theory than any religion out there. Okay, every single religion is a legendary conspiracy, whatever it may be, having absolutely no base in logic. Huh. So, you know, they
okay,
would,
you know, Leo, that's a I will support the abuses of you know,
oh, God,
more harm done maybe in the name of religion, but some people would say point to the Bible as a source of scientific fact about, for instance, comets and the recurrence of disasters to be not angels, but the angels of the comets and the spaceships. A lot of the stuff are, you know, astronomical events that the people in their mythology and legend did their best to maybe, Leo, try to pass on to future generations and yet failed because we tried to linearize them and put them in terms that it's really still maybe the
look at the laws
of nature that they were describing.
Look at Greek mythology. I mean, you had giants. You had the Titans, okay,
right,
first.
Right.
All right? And then the Titans had offspring, which were the gods, as we know them. All right? But I mean, giants have been in history since the beginning of history. All right? Even Enoch, in the Book of Enoch, the fallen angels, were giants.
The Elohim.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, you go back and keep going, and you look through all of your legends. There were giants.
Well, can we ask the question, Leo and George, Karen and
Myla,
also, what might be, if all these forces somehow come together, forces of nature, are we talking about something like, for instance, a comet? The reason why I say the comet is, it sets up the right environment, conceivably, for the megafauna to want to grow in what might be an ice age set off by the comet. The gravitational fields, big enough impact, changing the distance between the moon and the Earth, also changing the gravity, conceivably. The comet tail and the dust bringing in electric charges to have electromagnetic forces. The cometary chemicals putting in a bath into the environment for possibly producing mutagenic chemicals that will tweak the DNA. And somehow, long and short of it, it seems to me that there's some possible punctuated equilibria. There was a guy named Stephen Jay Gould, a great paleontologist now deceased, who spoke about opportunities for maybe a megafauna species to suddenly bloom. Any idea on whether or not these are episodic, or is it a persistent, like Darwinian evolution or de-evolution of the giant stories you're talking about?
Yeah.
The long and short of it, you said?
Which I would say is there may be effective mechanisms that tweak average-sized beings and cause a cascading out, George, of giants at different times, maybe by periods of episodic comet impact, which might set the right environmental and, say, genetic stressors to have an outcome tending towards larger stature beings.
Mm-hmm.
From what I can see in the book, it's actually quite the reverse, because over time, because these giants existed many, many millennia ago.
Well, look at dinosaurs.
Even up to a few hundred years ago, all right. But what happened to them? It seems like they in your book they state they lived up to 200 and maybe possibly 300 years. Okay, was an average lifespan for many of these.
Right,
people.
According to Deloria, correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look in your Bible, you got Methuselah with 900 years old. Okay, you've got these long living people that you know that lived until, you know, you came around with war. You know, the only way people died, I mean, it didn't seem like you had the kind of diseases we deal with today. Probably most diseases brought upon by air pollution, water pollution, and, you know, ground pollution. But the food we're eating, the genetically modified and whatever. But these seem to be creating the shortness of life, the shortening of life.
Yes, yes.
Not to mention the industrial, you know, age and so on. where people aren't living an agricultural or a existence any longer, or an outdoor existence, you know. So I think we're looking at the demise or the shortening of a person's life down to, what, 70 to 80 years, okay, the average lifespan in the world, as opposed to 200 years or 300 or 900 years as, you know, as time moved on. If this continues, we'll probably have the age of the average African male around 40 years old in the next 20, 30 years.
We were just born at an inopportune location on the precessional clock, I guess.
That has a lot to say, I think, with the situation that we're in now.
Yeah.
Because I think we're at a point where, you know, you mentioned cataclysms, how they could affect us. But if you take a look at one of the last cataclysms that hit, it was about between 14 and 17,000 years ago, where there was a comet that hit, and it hit off the coast of, I think, the Carolinas, and it caused a hell of a havoc. But understanding where we were in the progression of the equinox, we actually were falling asleep. And it was at that time that the ancients, what they did do, is they brought reincarnation into our belief systems, because spirits at that time, that caused a hell of a rift within the fabric of time. And what happened is that to close that rift, since then they've been closing that rift, but it saved us from a sense that we had hope for tomorrow. If we don't get it in this lifetime, we can get it in the next lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's with a closed consciousness where we were broken off from the unity consciousness, and it's since Thoth in Egypt was the one who gave us the ability to understand that, you know, there is an outside world. We wouldn't have the ability to read and write and to communicate. But we are coming out of that stage where we don't need the third dimension. We don't need to read or write to understand energies or just consciousness itself.
George,
so we don't need this physical stuff anymore.
What was your question?
George, what kind of rift did that cause that you were talking about?
The comet. What was a rift in what? In dimensions or what?
Well, you know, in dimensional rifts, where you had a lot of entities and allies coming from different dimensions of reality, lower and upper, that actually came into this reality and possessed a lot of people. In fact, there are still people now possessed, you know, with some of these evils, if you'd want to call it that. Some of them go back to the Atlantean times. A lot of Atlanteans were caught up in the eddy, if you'd want to call it that. And it's only been recently that the energy grids of the Earth have been changed, where people are actually breaking out of that pool of those energy fields.
Sounds like the movie again with the Krell, Forbidden Planet, and Watch Out for Monsters from the Id. All of us be forewarned, you know, to have positive intentionalities.
I have to admit that even as crazy and as innocent and as low-tech as it was in the 40s and 50s, but, I mean, the barrage of alien movies in the 50s is just unbelievable after the outbreak of Roswell and into 47 there. But you have to wonder. You have to really wonder. Not only was it our imagination, but how much of that
was the best way to introduce it to
us? The best way to introduce alien culture to us through the movies. But,
Karen, are you still with us?
She said she was coming in and out sometimes.
Okay, you know, it's
I'm
funny.
Here. Yes, I'm
yes,
listening.
You know, when you were talking about the crystals before. You know, I was thinking of just some of the latest technology with nanotechnology, where right now we have the technology to go in and actually produce bacteria, produce life. and we can actually build it just like we would build DNA. And the only difference between the real stuff and this artificial is the watermarkings, which identify whose copyright that this belongs to. And, you know, we have that ability now. In fact, if you go back to the science fiction, 20 years ago, with a Blade Runner, and understand the pretext of the movie itself, where an android was going back to the maker to change the structure of these androids that were being built. After a certain time period, that they would die automatically. They weren't able to live past 25, and it was built within the DNA. But I think part of the movie was actually coming in contact with some of these biological engineers that, you know, produced eyes and ears and so forth, and just think that we have that technology, and we are living in that world right
now. Truly.
It is limitless,
isn't it?
And nanotechnology is, you know, right behind it. We can go in there and actually rebuild. Who's to say we can't go in there with some of these medical diseases of fibers of the lungs and so forth, go in and with these small machines and just change the molecular structure of these ailments or whatever.
Bioethicists, I think we need some oversight here.
Oh, well, yeah, you're right.
But if we go back to the giants here, well, or now Karen, now what you came across some interesting things in your studies. You were talking a couple weeks ago about the some stone statue or
property,
something.
Property she bought.
On the property she bought, right?
Yeah.
But you had found some kind of a large stone giant. Is that? Did you say that?
It was an 8-foot head, and it didn't look all natural formation. There were some parts of it that looked unnatural, without defining beyond that.
Have you been back there since the last couple of weeks?
Yes, I have.
And were there any interesting occurrences?
Yes. Because it's this theory of coming back and finding the information that you left for yourself, which,
mm-hmm.
why not, right?
Right.
Why not? is true. I wanted to give that an opportunity and spend time in the format that was written in this article, which was don't just walk by it, stay a while, so it has a chance to register its presence.
Right.
And my experience was, I've done hypnotic trances personally, and I am trained as a hypnotherapist,
mm-hmm.
and my experience was an immediate deep trance, just like someone being able to put you under with a command,
mm.
and then being there for I'm not sure how long, and then coming out of that. So it was very unusual.
What did you experience in the trance? What was your, what did you see, or what?
What
did
do you remember?
Feel?
Do you remember anything?
No, I do not remember. But I think that, and I've had a couple other messages, that it will take a few more visits to totally download the information. And someone was saying, well, why would you want to do that? Well, only if it was you that left it for yourself, you know, obviously. And I think that we, you know, always need to be careful about how we define remembering, because, you know, there's some popular ways of talking about remembering. But who knows what we did in the past to set up remembering in the present.
Now, will you, the next time that you go, try to track how much time you actually spend there? So
yes, and I did. And I don't think I was in that state for very long, at least not in the three-dimensional way of thinking about things, but
right.
I certainly have heard of many people that got a lot of information and came back in the same moment that they left. So.
Any geotechnical occurrences, landslides, earthquakes, changes in groundwater, would, since we're talking about a stone giant conceivably like we were 2 weeks ago, maybe they have moved and are say, stirring again. Have we seen any changes in the lithology and the lay of the land? A reason why, sometimes people have said that this memory gets, say, infused, imbued into the land itself, and then there's an echo back.
Right. Now, actually, I didn't buy this property. I inherited it, and it's been in the family three generations. So, which some people find that significant. But there has been, and in fact, one of the synchronicities that happened was I stopped to help somebody. I stayed in a motel there one time when I went back to visit and stayed there and helped a lady change her tire. And when I was driving her to help her change, you know, get that fixed, I asked her what she did, and she said she's a doctor of geology because she's been coming to the area for 20 years. And she was from the UK, and she brings interns there because of the interesting geology. And she had never seen this particular area. She'd been on my property without knowing it's private, but she'd never seen this area. So I took her out there, and she pointed out some things, including Jurassic beachfront, you know, pieces of rock, but also that some of the rockfall in that canyon had happened in the last 10 to 20 years. And she showed me the difference, you know, the oxidation difference was apparent, but I didn't know what that meant. And she also pointed out the type of dirt that is 50 years to form, and no one had treaded on it for 50 years. So both things are very significant to me.
What do you feel, Karen? Regardless of what you think,
like
what do you feel?
Yeah. I feel like I'm right on track. I feel like I'm right. I'm, you know, the information I got this week when I was planning on going back anyway, and visiting and just sitting, I'm really drawn to it. I'm compelled to be there.
There you go.
And this information came to me the day before I was supposed to go through a newsletter I didn't even want to open up, but I thought, okay, I'm going to look at this anyway. You know, it's just those little things, those little directional things. Opening of a link because it had the word Livingstone in the title. Okay. It was an obscure article from 2006. I tried to look some other things up on that idea, but
right.
I haven't found anything. So I think it's all very significant. And it's
it sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, it's just the adventure of a lifetime.
Sure.
If nothing else.
So.
I'll lead that way in many ways. I'm glad you're following your intuition, you know, and following your guides. But getting back for a minute to the giants, it's so easy to see and to recognize that these people existed, all right, based on the archaeological finds, but understanding the how science is so eager to dismiss and destroy evidence that goes against the
accepted
thoughts or accepted theories, and all science, everybody says everything seems to be a theory, even though it's been proven factual. So many things in science that is still theoretical in nature, but I personally believe there were giants. There always have been giants, and we're probably descendants of them as well. But what you're doing, Karen, seems to be perhaps you were one at one time, just following your own.
I'm curious, your own
destiny.
I'm curious, Karen. Since you go into a trance, has anything been revealed to you in your dream state?
Not at this point.
Okay.
You haven't had any?
And I think part of this is a gearing up from subtle to more blatant, and I will look forward to that. But I did, you know, the giant reference did come up, and I had the property remote viewed and by someone in the UK that I know, and they said, you've got caves in this area, and I didn't know that I had caves. She said, and funny thing was, and she doesn't know anything about giants. She'd never heard of the giants before this, you know, after she referenced, I pointed her toward material, but she said, I felt like I was a giant walking on this land. So that was the first reference.
Well, when you find the Olmec head, the 8-foot diameter Olmec head of the African-like, we may begin again to find another outlier or other place of connection and resonance that's being, again, revealed at this time as people of the right intentionality, right person, right place, Karen. It does sound like you've been chosen.
Well, the first message I got after, it's 2 years yesterday that my husband died, one of the first messages I got is that I was a guardian, you know, and I just took that for what that was, that, okay, I'm willing to do that, whatever that means. So I think that there may very well be some things that come to the surface that will need to be brought to the public's attention. And I don't think that I'm the only one out there. I think this is going on all over the world. And certainly I'm seeing articles and news clips about new finds and new, you know, things that fit in our way of thinking because our paradigm's large enough, but obviously has to expand somebody else's or they have to just continue complete denial.
Well, that's their problem in a sense. You know, this is for you and your family, and I think it's just putting together, you know, this reality. And you know, the Hopis talked about this time, and the world, the way it's going so damn quick that what you have to do is you have to stay within your intent in life, or you know, in what you're doing, that you'll find what you're looking for. It'll come to you. But you know, you just got to keep your intent open, and it will find you.
Yeah, many people, especially indigenous people, believe they are the guardians of their sacred grounds and sacred worlds. And you said that you have caves on your property, and have you?
And I'm here. Yes.
But have you looked into these caves? Have you done any exploring into them?
Initial exploration. I had someone who came with me, and they were wall paintings
or anything like that that might be.
No, not yet. Haven't seen anything. Now the person that went in fact, they were so anxious to get in there and see what they might find. I think they basically had the wrong spirit, and they got very confused, and when that person came back out, they were disoriented. They didn't know how long they were in there. They didn't know how far in they were, and I found, as I brought a few different people into that situation, that basically you have to be invited. If you're not invited, you better not go.
No, Karen, you related a link to the Anastasi a couple of weeks ago. Do you believe there it was where the Anastasi went to?
Oh, well, this area is known as a crossroads, both by land and by water, by river, to, you know, going way, way back.
Right.
And that's been referenced in many materials.
In what state do you live in now?
I live in Colorado.
Oh, Colorado. Okay.
But this is not where the property is, no.
Well, Karen, you know, the Four Corners area there, you know, you take a look at the Anastasi. They just got up and left over a period of time. But who's to say that maybe they went through their ascension stage, ascension in a sense where they've ascended, you know, beyond this three-dimensional realities and gone to a fourth-dimensional reality and fifth and a sixth, of course. But who's to say that, you know, they didn't ascend already, that we are to follow, or let's say the Christians is one example of one belief system. But I've heard it said that the Anastasi did go underground first.
Well, it's going to be interesting, and I'm certainly approaching the cave thing with caution because they can be very dangerous anyway, and you know, they need to be properly approached, and I haven't had to go that direction yet.
Well, what are you afraid of, Karen?
I am not afraid. I'm just not getting the go-ahead on that yet.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
Inside of myself. So I've been in there. I've been through one place. There's some other places. I believe there's another entrance.
No.
It's not been discovered.
Let me interrupt just 1 minute. We're running down to the live show. Only 42 seconds left. So if anybody's out there who's listening, please give us a call. You can continue with us for a short while. call 646-915-9505 and join the conversation or just listen on, or just listen to our archives after the show. So I just wanted to say that. We've got about 20 minutes before we lose our stream. But go ahead, Karen. I'm sorry. I had to say that. Karen?
Yeah, I think that there's another entrance, but I think it may be well hidden from a normal view.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what will open it or what will happen to make it visible. Or, you know, I've heard all kinds of interesting ideas about toning, that some entrances to areas appear with toning, others just, you know, it takes a certain, you know, whatever, the right person,
mm-hmm.
the right key,
mm-hmm.
the lock to the key, so to speak. So I don't know yet what that is.
Well, at this point, at this time, you know, the energy grids of the Earth have changed. And the elders told us about the Four Corners area that is going to be reactivated, and now I believe the reactivation of the energies of the Earth. I think they've been activated.
And there are five vortices that cross within a 60-mile radius of this place.
Mm-hmm.
One being quite, I guess, a major ley line, I had never seen a map of that till just this last month.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the ley line, if I could, Leo, we were talking way back ago about another geological situation where the mounds in the Ohio Valley were built very close to what's known as the Great Magnetic Line that goes through the, say, western border of Ohio all the way down to Tallahassee. And some of Ross Hamilton's earlier work in The Mystery of the Serpent Mound speaks of the Adena and other people purposefully building their mound structures, possibly as if also to capture and focus the magnetic fluxes and flowing that goes through the ground, and that coupled with the ley lines, that this whole architecture and infrastructure, what have you, is able to give people who will maybe go into the subterranean to spend time to recharge the battery and to have that prolongation of life and the scintillation of the life forces. So it may well be that we're still working on rediscovering a lot of the technologies that we can use that Mother Nature offers us, say, on her belly, in the womb sort of structure. That
recharge the batteries?
Rebirth, perhaps, into our true essence.
There
what
you
have
go.
You, George?
That could be. We're kind of out of time, but I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And Karen, especially, thank you for your input. And I hope your journey is a good one. And,
keep us posted from time to time on that.
Yeah, please do. Join us on these programs. We'd love to have you. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, Karen, I did get your email, dear, and I hope to get back to you later on this week. We'll talk on that.
Okay, very good. Very good.
All right. And
I enjoy being a part of it, and it's just, you know, it's an adventure. We should all be enjoying the adventure of this time frame, I think.
Well, you know, you gave me some food for thought because there was a fellow, Richard LaFour Clark, who was a physicist, who was also an archaeologist. You know, he talks about the inner earth there and some of the tunnel systems, which are connected with the Aryan people, which were 8 or 9 foot red-haired people. Some of them will identify with Sasquatch, but understand that energy field has a massive tunnel system. But this is just some of the things that I was digging up, I think, for our conversations, is just dealing with the energies there. There's
tune in 2 weeks.
There you go.
But I'll hope, Leo, to get an invite again someday soon, and perhaps, George, as we
anytime.
Indicated, possibly get a friend talk next time about comets, if that's possible.
Frankly, Brendan, please feel free to join us next week, well, every other week with George's. But
yes, Brendan, please, feel free to call in. And Karen, thank
Karen
you for calling in.
Good night, all.
There's an author, Jeffrey Goodman, who wrote a series of books, and he's talking about, I think, the some of the latest information on comets. And I've been following Jeffrey's work since 1970 when he wrote We Are the Earthquake Generation. In fact, I did many radio shows and also lectures on some of the materials from his book. But hopefully we can get him. We might be able to get him on and see if he will share with us, you know, some of his new information. And now with the end times in 2012, you know, it'd be interesting to see what kind of a turn, you know, he would have to talk about.
Well, that would be great, George. We'd appreciate that. But we'll look forward to that.
And that'll be a couple weeks from now, maybe. So please join us then, guys. And George will be talking to you soon. And Karen, good luck with everything.
Thank you,
Brian. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night, George.
God be with you. Thank you.
All right. Good night, guys. And I want to thank everybody who did and had a great talk. And please join us next week, you know, Wednesday, Thursday. And the following week, join us Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday when we discuss issues with George. And good night, everybody.